Stonegate men, how are we doing? Good. It is so good to see you. This is, honestly, this is my favorite room to be in at Stonegate. We've got good food. Amen. We've got good food. We've got real men who are on this journey of becoming whole, mature, godly men. And we have a really big Jesus right here in the midst of us. It really is my favorite room. It's the best room we have at Stonegate for our men to come and gather in and to learn about Jesus. And let me just take a step back to make sure if you are new with us that you kind of have your bearings on what you're in for tonight. So let me kind of give you a walk through where we have been together over the last about year, maybe year and a half, on our men's nights, these nights when we have gathered. About a year and a half ago, we just centered ourselves on 1 Corinthians 16:13. It's one of those verses that most men, every man, needs to have memorized in the Bible. This is where Paul looks at the Corinthian church, and in particular the men of that church, and says, "Be watchful, stand firm in the faith, act like men, be strong, let everything you do be done in love." That is a great guiding verse for every single man in this room. 1 Corinthians 16:13. So that's where we started. And really in that verse, what Paul is doing is looking at the Corinthian church back then and you, the men of Stonegate now, and he is saying, men, you matter. You likely matter way more than you think you matter. Because as you, men, go, so goes the family. As you, the men, go, so go a church family. As you, the men, go, so go a city, so go a country, and so goes the world. You really, really do matter. Our 21st century modern world is not friendly to men, but our world needs strong men. Amen? Our world needs strong men, and Jesus died to make you, the men of Stonegate, the men this world needs. He's died to make you that, strong men, godly men, sacrificial men, responsible men, generous men, mature men, watchful men. God has died to make you, the men of Stonegate, that. So we started with that question from 1 Corinthians 16. What is a man? That was our first night. And then over our last few gatherings, we have turned to a different question. And that question is, who is a man? So we started with what is a man, then who is a man? Answer one was, men are sons with a father to enjoy. That was our first answer to that question. And then it was, men are husbands with a bride to love. That was our second answer to that question. And then our third answer was, men are workers with a job to do. That was our last men's night. And now here we are tonight. And here's what I want to try to convince you of over the next few minutes. Here is who you are as a man. Men are friends with brothers to keep. That is who God has made you, Stonegate men, to be. Friends with brothers to keep. So I want to pray for us, and then we're going to jump in and just go to the places where God would have us go tonight. So, Lord, would you show up in this room in some extraordinary ways? God, this is a divine appointment for some men in this room. There are specific things you want to use tonight to do in their life. So would you make every one of us receptive to that, responsive to that? We are along for the ride of wherever you want to take us tonight. Jesus, our answer is yes tonight. So Lord, help us, and it's in your good name. Amen. Andrew McCarthy starts his article in The Atlantic. It just was published this month, an article just a couple of weeks ago. He starts his article like this. The dog was asleep in the corner, and I was seated at the kitchen table drinking a cup of weak tea. My 21-year-old son sat cross-legged on the floor, messing with his guitar, telling me a funny story about a dating disaster involving one of his good friends. I said with affection, after Sam, my son, finished his tale, "Your friend's a fool." "He is," Sam agreed, "but I love him." We laughed. Then Sam stopped strumming and looked at me. "You don't really have any friends, do you, Dad?" You don't really have any friends, do you, Dad? Men, there are a ton of sons and a ton of daughters that they may never say that to you, but they know this to be true about your life. Dad, you don't have any friends, do you? I want to give you a chance just now as we're beginning to just do an inventory of your life and ask yourself the question, do I have friends? Am I a good friend? Just do an inventory of your life. Do you have friends? Now, here is why that question is so important. Here's reason number one. You, as a man, are made for friendship. This is how the Bible just describes who you are. You are a person, a man, made for friendship. It doesn't matter if you're 5 or you're 95, you need friends. The Bible works really hard to convince us that, and it starts with its opening pages. If you remember all the way back to Genesis 1 and 2, part of what happens there is we meet God in Genesis 1 and 2. And that God that we meet exists in triune friendship. So here's our triune God. There is one God. That God exists in three persons, God the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, and each of those three persons are fully God. And the God that we meet at the very center of him is a God that is one yet three, existing in this triune friendship, this friendship between God the Father and God the Son and God the Holy Spirit. This is the God that we are introduced to. And then the Bible says this about you, that you are made in the image of that communal triune God. So here's the first thing the Bible wants you to know about you, is that you are a communal creature. So it's no surprise when we get to Genesis 2:18 that we would read God saying this, "It is not good that man should be alone." The reason is because you were made for friendship. Genesis 1 and 2 affirm you need friends, and it tells us why. Because you were made for friends. You were made for friendship. This is part of the way God has designed you to be in the world. It's not just something you do. It's something you are. You were made like this. You were made for friendship. If you want to see that play out on a screen, I always love to use the illustration from Castaway. How many of y'all seen the movie Castaway? If you haven't, you should. Right? You're going to have to reach back into the album somewhere deep in there to find it. But it's in there, right? Chuck Nolan's stuck on that deserted island for 4 years, and he is so desperate for a friend, he makes one. And that friend's name is Wilson, right? It's a volleyball. That's how desperate he is for a friend. So the next time someone pulls that question of like, what are the 3 or 4 or 5 things you're going to take with you to a deserted island? That movie is living proof that a friend better show up on the list. Right? We all need friends. Drew Hunter, in his book on friendship, says it this way. According to the scriptures, friendship is an essential ingredient of the good life. Now, hear what he said. An essential ingredient to the good life. It is essential. Do you think about friendships that way? My observation among men is that friendship is, yes, one of the most important areas of their life, but one of the most neglected and least thought about areas of their life. It is an essential to the good life. Think about your life. We all have kind of the category of necessities. There's food, there's water, there's oxygen, there's all those things. But we think of friendship as a luxury in our life. If we can just get around to it, then we'll kind of think about friendships. But I've heard it illustrated this way. I think this is a helpful illustration for it. Imagine your life as a car. And what if friendship is less like leather interior and more like oil for the engine of your car? What if life without friends only takes us so far down the road until the car of your life begins to break down? Friends, that is exactly how the Bible sees friendship in your life. Can you survive without friendships? Yes, Chuck Nolan is evidence that you can do that. You can survive, but you will never thrive apart from rich, vibrant, wonderful friendships. You will not thrive as a man without that. This is how you are designed. Now, here is my angst for tonight. I think most of us in the room are living on a starvation diet of friendship. That's my angst. This is the reason we wanted to tackle this issue with you tonight. It's because many of us are living on a starvation diet of friendship. Most sons know this about their dads. And most people know this about men. In the New York Times, Sam Graham Felsen, about a year ago, wrote an article that started like this. The notion that men in this country suck at friendship is so widespread that it has become a truism or a punchline. Your dad has no friends, John Mulaney said during an opening monologue on Saturday Night Live. This is his monologue. It starts like this. Your dad has no friends. Then he goes on. If you think your dad has friends, you're wrong. Your mom has friends, and they have husbands. But those husbands are not your dad's friends. He goes on to say, what I didn't know is that American men are getting significantly worse at friendship. The data is out. A starvation diet of friendship for men is officially in. A starvation diet of friendship is the norm for men. This is just normal, par, sort of run-of-the-mill life of men is a starvation diet of friendship. A good chunk of men confess to having no close friend at all. It's fascinating. I did this week. I just Googled men and friendship. And if you just watch what comes up, it is all the data and concern about men are not doing well in this area of their life. It is not going good for men when it comes for friendships. And there's a lot of factors of why friendship is difficult for men. The busyness of life works against it. My gut would be to say, if I ask you the question, why don't you have better friendships in your life? Most of us would probably say something like, who's got time to make friends? That busyness works against it. The entire design of suburban life works against it. I mean, just think about how our lives are set up. We work long hours. We commute long distances. We pull out of the garage early. We pull into the garage late. We enjoy the backyard, not the front yard. The whole design of a suburban life is antisocial in that way. So the suburban design kind of works against it. Technology works against it. But let me pause and linger over this issue. When I ask men at what point their friendships begin to fall off, just think about that. Like, just the course of a man's life, their good friendships. Like, if we looked at a lot of our, like, maybe 15-year-olds in the room, they probably have friends. You could probably name them, and it'd probably go pretty good for them. They've got friends in their life. But there's at some point where friendships really just fall into the abyss. And almost everybody that I ask to, like, track that moment of, like, when did that happen in your kind of friendship life, it is to the T this answer. Marriage and kids. There it is. Marriage and kids. Do you remember what happened in college when your good friend started dating that girl? And you're like, wow, where did that guy go? Like, did the rapture happen? Like, that guy just disappeared. I never see him anymore. And then that guy gets married to that girl, and they have kids. And whatever friends he had at that point, they all quickly die. Those friendships are completely out the door as soon as those kids come into play. This is why years ago I laughed at this tweet. This guy says, nobody talks about Jesus' miracle of having 12 close friends in his 30s. There's some truth to that, isn't there? There's some serious truth to that. You put marriage and kids into play, and these things get really hard. And part of what I'm trying to convince you of, men in this room, the men of Stonegate, is you are made for friendship. That Jesus lived, he died, and he busted out of a tomb to give you the gift of friendship, the sacred gift of friendship, first to God and then to one another. This is part of the gift Jesus, the risen Jesus, wants to give you. You, men, are a friend. It's not just something you do, it's who you are. You are the keeper of brothers. And you need a lot of keeping yourself. You are a friend. So again, just take a step back and do an inventory of your life. Are you rich in friendship? Do you have deep friendships in your life? Are you a good friend? To help you answer that question, let's think about this question. What is a friend? So it's one thing to say, I have friends. It's another thing to think about, well, what is a friend? And then ask the question, do I have friends? Because friends are not people you talk to once every 5 years. Friends are not people that you know on Facebook. That is not what a friend is. So let me give you three sort of identifying qualities of a friend. You could think of it like a Venn diagram. It's where these three things overlap that you have what the Bible would call a friend, right? It's these three characteristics. Here's the first. It's going to come in three C's for you. The first is commonality. Commonality. Acts 2:42 says the early church was devoted to fellowship. Now, fellowship and friendship in the New Testament, both of those words show up, but fellowship really does give some texture to that word friendship. It actually has a way of like putting a word in front of that word friendship that's really helpful. Fellowship, in a lot of ways, is putting the word gospel friendship together for us. So there's a lot of overlap, but it does give texture to that word friendship. So here is the idea of what fellowship is conveying. Fellowship is often translated, that same Greek word that's translated fellowship, is often translated as sharing or to have in common. Right? So here's what that word fellowship is showing us. Friends, according to the New Testament, gospel friends, it's not just that they share some hobbies together. It's not just that they have some common interest in their life that they kind of go and do some of those things. That's not the primary emphasis of what they're sharing or what they have in common. According to the scriptures, what they have in common is the man, Jesus. They have a common salvation. They have been rescued from their sins and raised to new life in Jesus. Jesus is like the thing in their life. They share the thing of Jesus together. That's fellowship, gospel friendship. But it's not just that they share the man together. They also share the mission together, the mission of Jesus, the advancement of the kingdom. They are giving their lives to see disciples made to the ends of the earth. Right, that is what fellowship, people in fellowship in the New Testament have. Gospel friends have. They share the man and the mission. This is why J.R. Tolkien picked a great word when he called the nine in Lord of the Rings, the fellowship of the ring. So you have nine people, all very different if you know the story. But those nine people now share a life or death mission to destroy a ring and save Middle Earth. Right? It is the fellowship of the ring. They are sharing a common mission together. This is why David Matthes is right when he says true fellowship, true friendship in the New Testament, it's less like friends gathered to watch the Super Bowl and more like players on the field in blood, sweat, and tears huddled in the backfield in prep for the next down. That's the kind of friends we're going for. That's the kind of friends we're after. Gospel friendships. This is one reason I love the church, one of the many reasons I love the church. Look around this room for a second. You've got diversity in age, all sort of differences in age, in ethnicity. You've got all in interests, all sorts of differences in this room. But we all share something that is strong enough and big enough and has enough gravitational pull to keep us all together. We share the man and the mission together. Right? It's gospel friendship. There's got to be that commonality to have what the New Testament is getting at when it's talking about friendship or fellowship. So commonality is one. Here's the second characteristic. Constancy. Constancy. A friend is faithful. A friend is loyal. A friend is trustworthy. A friend is encouraging. And a friend is present in your life. They're present. They're showing up in your life. This is what that word constancy is getting at. They're showing up with all the things that happen when God's people show up in your life. That encouragement, all those things are showing up with them, but they're there in your life. You know, think about siblings for a moment. You didn't choose who your brothers and sisters were. That's not how it works. You're just kind of given those people, right? But it's different with a friend. A friend is something else. A friend chooses to push their loyalty and love towards you. Or as Proverbs 17:17 says, a friend loves at all times. That's the sort of constancy that we're talking about. A friend loves at all times. In the good times, in the bad times, in the average times, in the worst of times. And if you live long enough, you are going to experience beauty in this world and brokenness in this world. You're going to experience both of those seasons. And the present love and encouragement of a friend helps you endure all of those faithfully. Constancy, they're showing up in your life. Here's a text in the New Testament that I think is just a beautiful picture of friendship and what it's doing in our life and why we need it in our life and why we need that constant presence of friends in our life. The author of Hebrews says this in Hebrews chapter 3. He says, "Take care, brothers, lest there be in any of you an evil, unbelieving heart leading you to fall away from the living God. But exhort one another every day." There's constancy. You can't do that and live like halfway across the country. You've got to be around and inside of a person's life. "But exhort one another every day as long as it's called today, that none of you may be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin." You know, the longer I live, the more my ambitions for life just get like more narrow and more narrow. It's really just like three things. This is the goals of my life right here. I want to die loving Jesus. I want to die loving my bride, Laura, and I want to die loving Jesus' bride, the church. If I can die like that, I'm going to die a really happy man one day. My goals are really, really simple. But there are plenty of enemies to those simple ambitions to die that way. And this text names some of them. You've got enemy number one, the evil that still resides in my heart. He says, "Lest there be in any of you an evil heart." Right? There's still evil in you and in me. That's an enemy to us dying faithful to Jesus. Right? So you've got that evil that still remains in us. And because of that, our hearts, it says, are prone to unbelief. There's an enemy that one day we'll just stop believing in Jesus. And then it goes on to talk about a hardness of heart. That there's an enemy that your heart would grow callous to Jesus and you just wouldn't hear from him anymore, wouldn't be responsive to him anymore. And then it goes on to say that we will believe sin's lies. This is the deceitfulness of sin, that we will take the sermons that lie or that sin preaches as gospel truth. And then we'll organize our life around those lies as if they are true things. Those are dangers for every single one of us in the room. And what provision does God give us to fight against those enemies to stay faithful? What is that? Answer, the ongoing encouragement of gospel friends. The author of Hebrews says, "But exhort one another every day, that none of you may be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin." A gospel friend stays present in your life. And if you will let that gospel friend, their presence will keep you from ruin. They are God's provision to help you make it to the end. In John Bunyan's classic, The Pilgrim's Progress, if you know that story, Christian, the main character in the story, he would not have made it safely to heaven without his friends. If you've read Lord of the Rings or seen the movies, you know Frodo would not have made it to Mount Doom without who? Sam. Sam is like the hero of the story. He is a faithful friend who helps Frodo get the job done. And you, friend, will not make it safely home without friends. You need friends. Friends have commonality. They have constancy in your life. They're there every day to be an encouraging voice to help you love Jesus and not fall away into sin. And then thirdly, friends have candor. Here's the third quality of friends: commonality, constancy, and candor. Proverbs 27:17, a very popular verse when it comes to men and friendship. Many of you probably know it. As iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. How does that sharpening work? There's a thousand ways, but here's one of the primary ways: through candor, through honesty, through speaking the truth in love to a friend. That this is how sharpening works in your life. Or as Proverbs 27:6 says, "Faithful are the wounds of a friend, profuse are the kisses of an enemy." That is a vivid and very paradoxical metaphor, isn't it? I love the imagery of it. Faithful friends wound. And then on the other side, enemies are the one who are giving you kisses. I mean, it's meant to be paradoxical. It's meant to make you slow down and to think about your life and how things work in this world. And part of what that text is showing us is that really it's showing us what we need most from friends and what friends need most from us. Honesty. Even when it hurts, we need friends who will be honest with us. Why? Why do you need friends who will be honest with you? Here's why. Because you're weird. That's why. We all need friends who will be honest with us even when it hurts because we are all weird. And we're weird for two reasons. We're weird by nature. We're born weird. This is just what sin has done to every single one of us. Our hearts, even if we have been redeemed by Jesus, our hearts still have remaining sin in it. And here's what sin does to all of us. It makes us weird. Every single one of us, sin's doing that right now. Sin, because of that remaining sin in you, you today have weird compulsions in your life, weird appetites in your life, weird habits in your life, weird insecurities, you have fears. Every single one of us have those weird things happening in us. Right now, that is true of you. And we're not just weird by nature. Because of sin, because we're born into sin, we're also weird by nurture, because of our family of origin. Even the best of our families leave us a little bit distorted. Even if you have a great mom and dad, a great family ecosystem, they still leave you a little distorted. And here is the worst part about all of our weirdness. When you live with that weirdness long enough, what does it become? Normal. We begin to think this is how everybody operates and how everybody is, that we begin to think weird is normal. So God gives us the gift of friends to make us less weird, to round us out, to make us more normal, to help us see our blind spots, to help us mature as a man. You really will not mature in your life as a man apart from friends who will love you enough to speak with candor to you, to speak honestly to you. Commonality, constancy, and candor. Do you have friendships? Good gospel friends in your life? Now, let me address everybody who is married in the room. This is sometimes what I'll hear from men is they'll say something like this. Yes, I have great friendships because my wife is like my best friend. And I hope your wife is a great friend in your life. I really do hope that is true for you in your marriage. But if your wife is your only friend, you are poor in friendship. To say it another way, you need other men as friends. You need that. And if you don't have that, you are not wealthy in friendships. You are not rich in friendships. You are very poor in friendships. Do you have gospel friends? What is that gospel friend? You share that commonality with the man in mission. There's constancy. You're around them. They're around you. They're present in your life. There's candor. They speak the truth in love to you. You speak the truth in love to them. Do you have those type of friendships in your life? Are you that type of friend in the lives of other people? We are made for friendship. Now, here's the second reason that I wanted to convince you of why friendship is so important in your life. Yes, we are made for friendship, and we are made by friendship. You're made for it, and you're made by it. This is why we don't just need friends. We need the right friends, or what we might call gospel friends, right? You don't need drinking buddies in your life. You need gospel friends in your life. That's the sort of friend that you need to show up because friends form us in deep and profound ways. I like to say it like this around here, that we make friends, then our friends make us. You are formed by your friends. You are made by your friendship. It doesn't matter if we're 18 or we're 80, that is true of you. Your friends right now today are having a massive forming effect on your life. What you love, what you don't like, what's weird, what's normal, all of that is being formed right now by your friends. This is why Proverbs 13:20, Solomon says to us, "Whoever walks with the wise becomes wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm." That is just Solomon's way of saying we are made by friendship. You are formed by your friends. We make our friends and our friends make us. Friends have incredible forming power in our lives. Isn't it amazing to think what you've done in your life because of friends? Your friends can get you to do just about anything. I was just thinking about this week. When I was a senior in high school, my friends convinced me on a Monday night before we were about to play our crosstown rivals in a football game on Friday night. It's Monday night. They convinced me, you know what we ought to do tonight? We ought to get a big can of diesel. We should go to their football field, and we should spray our letters right into the 50-yard line of their football field. And what did we do on that Friday night? That's what we did on that Monday night. And what happened by the time you got to that Friday? You had a massive SHS right on their 50-yard line. This is the kind of thing friends will get you to do. When I was in junior high, my friends convinced me it was a Friday night. We're like, okay, you know what we're going to do tonight? We are going to get toilet paper, and we're going to go ambush some cars. And if you have a wad of, like, damp toilet paper, like a baseball-sized wad of it, and you throw it at the door of a car, it sounds like a bomb going off when it hits. And we've got our little ambush point, and here comes the next car that we're about to do this thing on. And, you know, it's like six of us, and there's just bombs hitting this car. And this poor lady, I don't know how old she was. She looked old, and she looked really scared, and her window was down. I'm pretty sure one of those actually went through the window. And I just hear this lady scream. About the time the first kind of wad of toilet paper hits the side of her car, she screams, "Oh my God, they're shooting at us." I'm like, what am I doing with my life right now? This is the kind of things that friends will get you to do. When I was 28 years old, I had a good friend look at me and say, "Rodney, you know what you should do? Plant a church." Is it going to be hard? It is. Do I think you can do it? I think you can, and I think you should. It's amazing what friends can get us to do. And if our friends are foolish, you give it time, and you're going to be an idiot too. But if our friends are wise, you give it time, and their wisdom is going to become your wisdom. You're going to grow in wisdom right along with them. The old axiom is right. Over time, you're going to be the average of your five closest friends. Friends have incredible forming power in our life. You are made by friendship. Think about the forming power of friendship in the Bible. Where would Peter have been without the candor of his friend Paul in Galatians, calling him out for being out of step? Just a twinge of racism grabbing his heart. Where would Peter have been without that friend Paul speaking the truth in love to him? Where would Paul have been without the blessing and the encouragement of gospel friends in his life? You can read about him at the end of Romans in 16, Colossians 4. He had a whole posse of gospel friends in his life, and Paul would not have made it alone without those guys. We often think of Paul as this standalone hero. That is not how the New Testament presents him. He is one guy standing in a room full of gospel friends who are taking the gospel to the ends of the earth. And without that room full of friends, it does not happen for Paul. Just like it's not going to happen for you without friends. What would have happened to David without the constancy and encouragement of his friend Jonathan, who shows up in some of the darkest seasons of his life to strengthen his heart? That's the way the Bible describes what Jonathan did for David. He strengthened his heart. Just his presence was life-giving and encouraging. His words were life-giving and encouraging. Where would David have been? What would his life have turned out like without Jonathan? And where would David have been apart from the candor of a guy like Nathan? Showing up in David's life to drag him out of his sin and back into faithfulness to Jesus. Where would David have been? And friend, where will you be without friends like that? What would happen to me apart from friends like that? Nothing good is going to happen in your life or my life without friends like this. Because you're not just made for friendship, you're also made by friendship. Now, let me finish just by giving you some practical encouragement. I want to land the plane with just some very practical things here. I want to give you two things that you can do tonight to take steps toward these type of friends. Number one, you should pray for gospel friendship. When is the last time you have just begged the Lord, "Would you give me great friends? God, would you do that? Would you give me great friends? If you today have good friendships, you are rich in friendships, you should thank God for that today, and then you should tell those friends that you thank God for them. But if you are poor in gospel friendship, can I just encourage you to start begging the Lord for that? God, would you give me great friends? Great friends, the friends I need to become everything you want me to be. God, would you give me those friends in my life? Then after you pray, here's what I want to encourage you to do, is to pursue gospel friendship, to pursue it. So pray for it, pray first, and then after you pray, start pursuing it. Get after gospel friendship. Pursuing gospel friendship means being proactive. In other words, you should just take this to the bank. You will never drift toward being rich in friendship. That's never going to be the drift of your life. The drift is always toward loneliness. Or we could say it this way. A passive approach to friendship will always leave you friendship poor. So if you are assuming, I'm just going to sort of stumble into this without any proactivity, you are going to die one day friendship poor. It takes proactivity. It takes a pursuit. Here are a couple of the things I want to encourage you to do to pursue gospel friendships. Number one is for you to go to places where you can make gospel friends. Get into those places. I'll just give you a few examples of that around Stonegate. A community group would be a great place to start. If you're not in a community group, you should talk to Brandon and I. Get into Enjoy. Get into a group. That is one place where gospel friendships are going to be found. This is one way you can be proactive in pursuing gospel friendship. Here's another way you can do that. Brandon meets every Thursday morning from 6 to 7:15 up here at the church every Thursday morning with a group of 30 or 40 men. If you just need a place to like plug in like next week, you should do that. Be a great place for you just to get around some other men where gospel friendships can form. Every Thursday, 6 a.m., it's there and available to you. You should find a team to serve on around here. That's going to have you bumping shoulders with other men, and that's going to give you a context for these sort of gospel friendships to form. You could jump on our safety team. You could jump on the parking team, connections. There's all sorts of teams you could jump on that are just going to get you around other men where these types of friendships can form. And here's one more for you. You should try Men's Alliance. We probably have a few Men's Alliance people in here. Yeah, I would assume so. There it is. So here's what I would say about Men's Alliance. One, you're going to get a workout in. Many of us could use just a consistent time to get a workout in. So you're going to get a workout in, and you're going to be around it's a masculine context. I actually really like that about Men's Alliance. And they are good friends. They are support. I mean, it's a thing. You should try that sometime. If you're a Men's Alliance person, help me out with times. We have Saturday morning at 7 and Thursday night up here at 7. There you go. Saturday morning, 7. Thursday night, 7. You can do that anytime. Jump into that. That's a good, easy place for you to jump in and find good gospel friendships. So you got to get into those streams. You got to go to those places where gospel friendships can form. Secondly, once you get there, you should ask this question. Who do I need to become friends with? Who do I need to become friends with? Because we're all so insecure, here is how we typically make friends. We typically make friends by figuring out who will befriend me. So we walk into a room, our insecurity is loud, so all we're doing is scanning the room for who would open themselves up so that I could like move in that direction and find a friend over there. That's how it most of the time happens. And I just want to encourage a different way of thinking about how you develop friendships. And that different way is you asking the question, who around here do I need to become friends with? And then you ask them. You're proactive with it. And if that doesn't work, you go to the next person and you pursue that one. All right. And this is how men develop friendships with other men. You're going to have to go to those places, get in those spaces with other men, probably doing something shoulder to shoulder with them. And then you look around and say, who do I need to become friends with? And you pursue that friendship. This is how it works. And by the way, if you're married in the room, you should ask that with your wife. Who should we become better friends with? As a married couple, that's a great question to be asking as a couple together. Okay, so we go to places where gospel friendships can form. We ask the question, who should we become friends with? And then thirdly, we invest in those friendships. We have to, it takes an amazing amount of time to develop deep, rich friendships. It takes investment, serious investment, to develop those types of friendships. When I look at my life today, I am 46 years old. When I look at my life today, I feel very rich in friendships. I am so grateful at my relational world. It's really wonderful. In a lot of ways, I feel like it's the most important wealth that I have. It is far more important to me than dollars and cents in my life. It's the most important wealth that I have is the wealth that I have in my friendships. And that investment that has led to that wealth in relationships, that started about a decade ago with a conversation with an older friend of mine. And here's what that conversation sounded like with that friend. He looked at me and said, "You are on the cusp of entering your 40s. Now I want to just kind of wake you up to what life in your 40s and beyond is going to be like for you." He said, "Rodney, you're likely going to accomplish more and do more than you have ever done post 40 years old in your life. So whatever has been accomplished, you're probably going to accomplish and do more post 40. But everything you accomplish post 40 is going to add nothing to the quality of your life. It's going to do zero for the enrichment of your life." And men, if you are above 40 in this room and you are at the plow thinking you accomplishing the next thing is going to do it for you, it's not. He said, it's going to do nothing to add to the enrichment and the quality of your life. But here is what will post 40. Post 40, what matters the most is relationships. Post 40, what is going to matter the most to you is the quality and depth and the richness of your relational life with God and with others. That is where your life will be enriched. And if you are poor here, you don't make these investments now, they're going to lead to something different in a decade from now. If you don't do that, and you wake up at 45 or 50 or 55, and you find that you are poor in friendship, here's what you're going to really feel in your life, that your life is poor. But if you wake up there and you realize, man, I am wealthy where it really matters. I'm wealthy here in friendship. Here's what you're going to find. You've got all the wealth you need in life. Your life is going to feel so wealthy to you. So here's what that did for me in my late 30s. It just set me on a course of pursuing and investing in friendships. And here was, by the way, so part of that is inside of Stonegate. I have really wonderful friends that are inside of Stonegate that I'm so grateful for. Over the last decade and a half, I mean, we have been through some of the lowest of lows. Some of the highest of highs. We've got all the battle scars and the stories that come with those stars. There's been a lot of investment into those friendships that are local and here at Stonegate. And I have invested in friendships outside of Stonegate. There are two pastors that I text with every single week of my life. They're just in my life. Once a month, we meet for breakfast. Every single month. It's just on the calendar. We meet for breakfast once a month. And every about 18 months, we take some sort of a trip together. We do something where we're investing in a friendship. We're going to go learn together. We're going to give some unhurried time where we can enjoy one another. It's those sorts of things. Every 18 or so months, we've done that. So now we have this incredible bank of shared memories that we get to pull from and rehearse. It's been an amazing thing. And all of that was the fruit of that conversation at about 35 years old of a guy saying, "You better wake up to the season that you're in. If you're not rich here, it won't matter if you're rich in that bank account. It won't matter if you're rich in other areas. What you're going to feel is this. Are you rich relationally?" And so I want to encourage you tonight. Here's my encouragement to you. Pursue gospel friendships. Go to those places, right? Ask that question, who should I become friends? And then start to invest in those friendships. Text them a lot. Meet with them on a regular basis. Make some shared memories together. We have a lot of our men who go on Way Forward trips. You might try that out. A lot of our guys just find a hard thing to do, and then they do that with other men. It's a great shared experience together. Others go away and learn together. Others just go away and have some unhurried time together. Whatever that looks like for you, you should do that. My wife tonight is spending the night, I don't even know where she is, somewhere in Dallas, with a group of friends to celebrate one of their birthdays. I love that. That's a way to invest in friendship. I'm so glad she's doing that. And if I heard you were doing that, I would be like, yes, I am so glad for them that you're investing in friendships like that, because that is the wealth you really need in life. So let me finish here. In the early pages of the Bible, there's this story of Cain and Abel. Y'all remember that story? It's in Genesis 4. If you know that story, Cain kills his brother Abel, and then the Lord comes to Cain and asks him the question, where is your brother Abel? And Cain responds back by saying, I don't know where Abel is. And then he asks this of the Lord, am I my brother's keeper? I don't know where he is. Am I supposed to know that? Am I my brother's keeper? And Cain's question implies Cain's answer. And Cain's answer was, no, I'm not. Cain's assumption, his answer is, I need no keeper, and I will be no one else's keeper. That is a man, Cain, that is a man in isolation. That is a man who is all by himself. He is no friend, and he has no friend. In Stonegate Men, Cain is a perfect picture of the type of man our world wants to make you. This is where the currents of our world will take you. It's where the currents of your sinful inclinations are going to take you. But here is the great news. Jesus makes us new men. He makes us new men. The part of us that looks and sounds like Cain dies a gruesome death. That old us, that isolated us, that us who says, I need no keeper and I will be no one's keeper, that person dies. It's gone when Jesus comes and takes up residence in us. He is no more, and Jesus then gives us new life. The new you, men of Stonegate, the new you is a good friend. The new you has good friends. We no longer ask Cain's questions, and we no longer believe Cain's answer, because we, the men of Stonegate, know we are friends. We are kept by others, and we are the keeper of our brothers.